Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I have a personal boundary that I strongly prefer that people not yell around me. And earlier today, I almost thought we were going to have to cancel this podcast recording because there were a bunch of men yelling outside my window just about nothing for way too long. You don't need to yell. It's almost never necessary to yell. Calm the fuck down. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger and was raised with really only one rule in my house, and that is the only reasons for yelling is if the house is on fire or there is a man with an axe standing behind you.
And but I, not like, I was a man with a knife.
No.
Or a man with a flamethrower.
No.
Well, unless just an axe, the house on fire. Right.
I was, I say that as a joke, but I was literally tested on this, 2 weeks ago when my partner met my dad for the first time. Someone was yelling, and he, gathered the children and was like, when do we yell in the house? There's a fire or an axe, man. All of us are, late teens and 20s, and when there's a fire or an axe, man, I'm sorry.
Have either of those situations ever arisen?
No. No, mild fires, but not really otherwise. We're just a house full of Italians, so we need very strict guidelines.
Yeah, I like that. Strict boundaries, you might say.
Right.
Which is, in fact,
lots of Italian men in that house. Not one of us quiet.
That's all right, just as long as you don't yell until the Axeman arrives. That sounds like something that would happen in The Sims. It's just a random
bringing it back around to the bloop they won't hear till the end. Look at us go.
Yep. Keep listening at the end or it won't make any sense. Probably still won't make sense then. So we're talking about boundaries. I feel like I'm hearing a lot of discussions of boundaries nowadays, what with people staying at home in some cases, because there is a stronger need for not only to set boundaries sometimes with the people you live with, but also it's harder to set boundaries around Zoom calls and stuff than it used to be when you could be oh, sorry, I got to go to a work meeting, or I have another thing I got to get to. They know. I mean, not so much anymore as people are starting to go back to work, but they knew at the time that you probably were just going to turn on Netflix.
I mean, even with work, though, on the other side of things, those of us working from home, those boundaries are also a lot harder because you have managers who are well, you're not going anywhere, right? Ha ha. So here's some extra work. And you're like, no, but that's not funny, though. No. And, yes, there is absolutely external pressure there from a lot of people's bosses. Capitalism is a bitch, but I think there's also a lot of internal pressure where, free time in the past used to be that time you had in between things, and now you're every moment can be optimized.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah, we were just talking about this before the show, actually, about how, every day these days, I just feel like I'm not doing enough work, and yet I am doing too much work. I think that's just where we're at as a society. I think that that's, a pretty normal feeling right now.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about the idea of boundaries and try to maybe define what we mean when we say that. And maybe specifically in reference to setting boundaries with partners. How would you define that?
What I like about how my understanding of boundaries has kind of evolved over time is that I've come to understand them as very strictly, I don't want to say rules, but I guess guidelines around what you're comfortable with encountering and engaging with in your own life. And the distinction there being, I can't have a boundary that my partner can't have unprotected sex with other people, right? I don't feel comfortable with that being a boundary, but I can have a boundary that I don't have sex with partners who are having unprotected sex with people I'm not fluid bonded with. Right? Mm-hmm. Because that's about me and what I'm willing to engage with. And if that boundary means I'm not having sex with my partner because they're having sex with other people, and that becomes a relationship issue. That is a thing that can be addressed, but it's not because I'm saying they have to act in this way. I'm saying you're conflating with this thing that I'm not comfortable engaging with, and that can be around emotional and physical safety and all kinds of things.
Yeah, I really, really like that definition, too. And I originally encountered that differentiation in Dr. Liz Powell's book, Building Open Relationships, which differentiates between agreements, rules, and boundaries.
I believe that's also in being, More Than Two.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that they're really useful concepts, like, not only for non-monogamous people, but for monogamous people as well. And, like, an example that I encounter often when answering people's, like, sex advice questions is, some people are like, is it reasonable for me to not want to date someone who refuses to perform oral sex on me? Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's like, you know, essentially the same question, but at a different point in the relationship might be, is it fair for me to tell my boyfriend I'm going to break up with him if he doesn't go down on me more regularly or at all? And I think that those are like two slightly different situations, but like, I think it is well within your rights to say, I have a boundary. I do not engage in relationships sexually or romantically with people who refuse to go down on me. That does not mean I am forcing you to go down on me. Mm-hmm. Although the tricky thing is, in practice, it might make someone feel slightly coerced, but that is a situation where, like, I think a boundary is a more useful thing than, like, a rule, where obviously that would be very problematic as far as consent goes.
Right. And I think of boundaries a lot as kind of the terms for engagement, right? Like, this is the playing field I'm comfy playing on, or, you know, what does the overlap look like between us? It's not, you know, you're not creating a maze of boundaries just to, like, limit your partner's behavior, or, you know, it's not a goal of creating just the perfect boundaries so that you never have to feel a feeling. That's a thing I see happening a lot. It's just a way of articulating what you're comfortable with and what you need out of your relationships, and kind of, I don't know, yeah, setting the groundwork, and seeing where someone's willing to engage.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the reasons it's so important is that if you don't set boundaries, or you're not very good at sort of upholding them for yourself, you can find yourself in relationships that will make you feel very resentful, because those lines are being crossed over and over again, either because you haven't stated where those lines are, or like the other person just isn't respecting the lines that you've set. And like, boundary setting has been a hugely useful skill for me, and still something that I'm working on in a lot of different contexts.
Yeah, it's absolutely something that I struggle with. And one of the things I'm realizing more and more, you know, in my old age of my late 20s, is that I have a lot of boundaries that I didn't realize were boundaries until I spent a lot of time ignoring them.
Can you give some examples? I love some juicy examples.
I mean, I think the easiest example is just in, like, exploring polyamory and my relationship preferences and the styles of relationships that I enjoy, because there are a lot of things that, like, yeah, you can extrapolate a lot from your preferences and how things sound in theory and what intellectually and morally you believe. And then you get to have feelings and experiences, and those are going to color some things. And there are definitely times where I've, like, you know, explored different things and been very, very down for them at the time, and, you know, on reflection or in the moment, realized, hey, this is, you know, a thing that makes me feel icky, or I feel icky over time. What is it about this that are raising those complicated feelings, and what are the healthier ways to address that, right? Again, we're not making the hedge maze to, like, avoid any of it, but where are the places that, like, I think are just how I relate in the world and what makes me comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the really scary things about boundaries is like the times when you know that you have one that you need to state, but you also know that stating it could very well lead to like the end of the relationship. Like a lot of the most troubling situations I've run into in relationships have been times when like I didn't set a boundary that I really wanted to set because I just got the sense that the person and I were on fundamentally different wavelengths when it came to this particular topic and it was not going to be well received. Like I remember I dated a guy a few years ago who had two other partners at the time, which already like I knew was going to be an issue for me because they were two like pretty serious romantic relationships and like so was ours, which like as a result of this relationship I have among other things like tightened up my own boundaries around like how much time do you actually have to devote to me before we decide to hop into a relationship together? But one of the things he did that drove me absolutely up a wall was like when we were together on our like quality time dates, he would be texting with other partners and not just like once in a while, not when I got up to go to the bathroom, like pretty consistently throughout. And I raised this with him at one point and I was kind of passive aggressive about it, honestly, or maybe a like just indirect is the better word. I was just like, I feel like maybe like I wasn't like clear before about like wanting quality time with you and like wanting you to be really focused and like not distracted and stuff. And he was like, well, I think that we actually just have fundamentally different positions on the issue of like staying in touch with other partners while we're hanging out. And I didn't even really know how to respond to that because I was like, yeah, you're right. But like, what does that mean? Does that mean I have to completely abandon my desire to feel comfortable with you? Or does that mean you have to completely abandon this freedom you obviously really want? Or does it mean we have to break up? And that is a complex question when that kind of thing comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the conversation around boundaries can get complicated because it is a word that carries a lot of weight, and more so than I think it used to. And boundaries sometimes get talked about as if they are magic and untouchable. I have my holy special boundary. It's like my fundamentally held religious beliefs. Like I can't, you don't talk about, you know, you can't interrogate it or that's, rude or, you know, insulting or whatever. And this isn't to say that you should sit down and berate someone about their boundaries. Like, people are allowed to have their boundaries. However, when you are trying to engage in a partnership or relationship with someone, and not necessarily romantic, just any kind of relationship between two humans, sometimes you'll need to discuss and think critically about your own and each other's boundaries to find the ways that they fit together, right? The overlap in that Venn diagram may not be super obvious. And I think it is important to find spaces and people with whom, like, you feel comfortable having that conversation. Because again, not everyone is entitled to sit down and debate your boundaries with you, right? But if it's someone you're in a serious relationship with over time, maybe a discussion around boundaries isn't out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I think that something you're getting at there is like, this is a tool that can be very easy to subvert for abusive purposes. And then, I mean, that's true of so many relational tools. It's very unfortunate. I mean, we see like faux feminist men using the rhetoric of feminism to get into people's pants and just all sorts of things of people like perverting things in ways that they should not be for abusive ends. But yeah, I've sometimes seen boundaries stated as like, it is my right to say that, like, I do not put up with this particular behavior. And the behavior that they're singling out may be a perfectly reasonable behavior, like someone wanting to know where you are when you've been out drinking with your friends all night and, like, a partner wanting to check in or something like that. Like, there is a certain extent to which, like, your idea of reasonable may not line up with someone's idea of reasonable. And then, like, that's a genuine, like, compatibility issue. But I think also sometimes people use the idea of boundaries as, like, a false front for just being unreasonable people or sometimes even abusive people. So it's tricky. You kind of have to read people's intentions and figure out for yourself whether you think what they've stated is like legitimate and whether you find them like worth staying with over it.
Right. I don't know. Part of this, that like it's my right thing, almost comes down to like the free speech arguments I hear a lot. Like, sure, it is your right.
Yeah.
It's also my right to like disagree with you. Or like, it's also my right to
think you're an asshole.
Right, exactly. Or to decide not to engage with people who demand those things out of relationships. Or, right. But yeah, I think what I'm hoping for is that, like, in a discussion where everyone is coming to it in good faith, what can be helpful in these conversations is to interrogate a boundary, because while I'm saying we're not trying to legislate out feelings, we may be trying to, I don't know, create kind of like bumpers in the bowling alley to protect you from, like, falling off the cliff on the sides of feelings, right? I can experience a range of emotions in my relationship. There are certainly times where I will feel like complicated jealousy feelings, or, you know, I might feel insecurities or whatever. It's like, there is, I expect a roller coaster of feelings. But sometimes there are things that, like, for minimal effort on my partner's part, can stop me from feeling like a really dramatic spike of jealousy. Like, my partner has tweeted on their sex work account about, like, being able to take cream pie or cum shot photos because their other partner is a cis man. And, like, that was a surprisingly high spike of jealousy for me because it was linked with, like, dysphoria feelings and stuff. Like, yeah, I could spend, you know, a couple of weeks unpacking that and addressing those feelings and really working through it. But, like, I have other shit that I need to work through, and it's just a hell of a lot easier to tell my partner, like, hey, I don't look at your OnlyFans, post that shit on there, and, like, just don't talk about it to me. And they're like, yeah, cool. It takes them no effort to remove that from our conversation, right? And that's a boundary I have that I'm like, this is silly. Neither of us need to deal with those feelings for this, like, low of a benefit. And for me, like, I could have a boundary that is like, I never want to hear any of the details about any of the sex you have or know that you have sex with the partner that you live with. And, like, I could have that boundary, but it would be really complicated. And my partner really likes gushing about how cute their partner is. And, like, they're not sitting around giving me, you know, in-depth details about their sex lives with other people because boundaries. But just knowing where the actual line is for me and the nuance of exactly what made me uncomfortable versus just like, yeah, there was a feeling over there, let's run away from all of it.
Yeah, something I feel like I'm learning over and over again through therapy is like the line between what feelings that I have can I manage and what feelings can I not manage if they're coming up chronically, and do I need someone else's help to manage? And I think boundaries are a useful tool in that, but they can't do everything because, as you said, like, sometimes feelings are going to come up anyway, and trying to legislate away your feelings is usually not very effective.
And the other thing with boundaries is, like any negotiation, they're not permanent. I mean, they can be, certainly, but there are also times where, like, I've sent my partner a text and been like, I'm feeling like particularly vulnerable and tender today. I don't want to hear XYZ things. Or I'm feeling like particularly insecure about this. So just for like the next couple of days, can you check in before you say, you know, why things about this other issue? So I've definitely set up, or I've even set up boundaries where I'm like, hey, so this is, like, irrationally upsetting for me, and it's because I've got a shit ton of baggage, and, like, I'm working on it, but in the meantime, if you trip over that landmine, it's gonna set me off, and then I'm gonna feel bad about it a few hours later. So maybe while I handle this, that boundary exists, with the understanding that I wish I didn't have to impose it, and I'm working on it.
Yeah, one of the questions we got from a listener is about how to know, like how partners' boundaries are changing over time and how often to check back in about them. And I think this can be really tricky because if you state a boundary that for you feels permanent and a partner is every so often going, hey, is that still true? Is that still the case? Like it can feel a little bit pressury. So I like to be self-reflective when setting a boundary and think like, is this permanent? How sure am I that this is permanent? And if I do feel like there will be an expiry date in any way for this boundary, I might say like, let's check back in about this in a week or in 3 months or in a year, like whatever it may be, and try to like set a date on it and like put that date in your calendar if you need to, like, because it's easy to let these things fall by the wayside and just revisit it. But I think like pestering someone repeatedly, like, hey, are you still uncomfortable with me coming on your face? Like that, you know, there's some stuff like it's like just like really triggering or upsetting or just like rude to feel like you're being pushed on. So I do think it is a read the room situation. But if you're not sure, you can ask a partner, like, is it cool if I check back in about that? Or do you think that's going to just stay like that? And try not to ask in a judgmental way. Try to ask in a way that seems like you're genuinely asking, because hopefully you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in the way you were talking about reading the room, like, I think it is a matter of if you're sitting there and going, oh, hey, they said they weren't down for this thing. We haven't talked about that in a minute. And we've done these other adjacent things. Maybe they're down for that thing. Then, yeah, have that conversation. If you asked them last week and they rolled their eyes and were like, no, really, I'm not, no. Don't ask them again.
Yep. So we both acknowledge that setting boundaries is sometimes hard for us to do. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what has made this easier for you, either like things that help in the moment or like long-term things that you've been working on to make it easier for you to set boundaries.
So, somewhat in the moment, things that have made it easier for me to create boundaries is having set lots of little boundaries and just being comfortable setting lots of little boundaries. Things like, or just voicing preferences. I was a person, silly and little, right? But if you're in a group of five or six people and someone says, what do you want to get for takeout? I say, oh, whatever. I can find something anywhere. Because I don't want to be the person who makes it difficult for five people to decide a seamless order. But changing that to, I don't know, anywhere. I'm not really feeling pizza right now. I could be convinced, but, and Chinese is always a favorite of mine. I've given them a little bit more framework, and I'm still not inconveniencing anyone, right? No, if I say, you know, I'm not in the mood for pizza, but like I could be convinced, the other person might go, oh, that's fine, I wasn't even thinking about that, or might be like, oh my god, like we can talk about it, right? But I have at least voiced my preferences. I've given them a little bit of realm to work within, and the more I do that and don't have someone go, the fuck you mean they can't have pizza, I want pizza, fuck you, get out, like the more I feel comfortable expressing more serious things to that person. The other thing that I have found really helpful over time is a little bit of what I mentioned earlier, but recognizing what happens when I don't ask for these things and remembering that feeling and remembering how much worse it is and recognizing in and of myself that boundaries are not a preference, right? Like I used the glib takeout example. But a lot of the things I consider boundaries are things that I'm like, yeah, this just isn't going to go well if I ignore this. Like, yeah. I can say, yeah, I could deal with that. Yeah, sure, I can. Yeah, that sounds fun. Or like, you know, I can, yeah, whatever. I'm down for anything. Sure, whatever. I'm not going to have a good time. They're not going to have a good time. And then I'm going to feel weird about it and have to deal with the fact that I feel weird about it. And it's just more trouble than it's worth. But that's also a lot of working on my people-pleasing stuff, which is a whole other project.
Yeah, I really identify with that, and specifically in relation to the trope that I feel like I'm constantly up against, the trope of the chill girl. which is something that I feel very pressured to, like, hold myself to, or at least I did when I was dating more actively. And I ultimately realized that, like, the type of person who's going to expect me to uncomplicatedly be a chill girl is not the type of person I want to be with, especially not long term. And also, the type of person I do want to be with doesn't actually really want me to be a chill girl, because they don't want me to be unhappy, and I'm going to be unhappy if I have to be the chill girl. So, like, I remember coming to a crossroads with my current partner, like, probably like a month or less into us dating, where, because we were talking on the phone pretty often at night, but sometimes they would be like, I'm going out to this event, or I'm going out with a friend, and, like, I'll let you know when I'm home, and we'll talk on the phone. And I started to feel kind of upset by this, because from my perspective, like, sometimes I was going out doing my own things, but sometimes I was just at home waiting for their text. Mm-hmm. And so I said, it was really scary for me. And I said to them, because I didn't want to fuck this up, I really, really liked this person, but I said, like, hey, it doesn't make me feel great when you just sort of expect me to be available whenever you get home. So mm-hmm. if you could give me an estimate, like, when you think you'll be home, and, like, keep me updated, just so I can, like, you know, do other things.
Live my
instead
life.
Of, like, yeah, like, you know, I know how much time I have. I can decide whether or not I want to put it on an episode of New Girl or a whole ass movie or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. It just makes my life easier and makes me feel less stressed out. And they were like, oh my God, you're totally right. Like, I absolutely can do that. But, like, part of my calculation in communicating that was, like, I knew that I probably wanted to date this person long term. And sometimes mm-hmm. when I know that I don't want to date the person long term, I'll just be like, you know what? Doesn't matter. It's not worth it.
Right.
Which I know it's not great, but
no, but I get that, because when it's someone that you, like, see a future with, you're putting an investment into that future, right? Mm-hmm. That conversation is going to be so much more annoying down the line when it's like, you've just not been telling me this.
Yeah.
Like, the little version of that, I was streaming a movie with someone recently, and they left the cursor on the screen, and the thing is, I didn't know, like, I was doing other things and fucking around, and then we were, like, 30 minutes into the movie, and I was like, well, now if I say it, it's weird. So then yeah. I watched a 2.5-hour movie with a cursor on the screen.
See, that's where I would say something like, oh, hey, I just noticed the cursor's on the screen.
The thing is, I was high, and I just couldn't. I was just like, this is the situation I'm in. That is too yeah. much social dexterity. I don't have the... And I was watching Midsommar, so...
Oh, no.
I was like... things kept happening. It was a very intense experience for me, and I was like, I can't navigate also talking to this person out loud yeah. with my face. God, no.
just makes that very scary horror movie even scarier somehow.
Actually, it made it a little better.
Because you're just like, it's not real. There's like a cursor.
Every time something got scary, I looked at, like, the cursor. I was like, oh, right, it's all happening inside a computer. It's fine.
Wow, that's so smart. Pro tip for horror movie watchers. That's great. We've been talking a lot about setting boundaries, and I also think it's important to talk for a bit about, like, being the person to whom a boundary is set, mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we're telling people not to be shitty and defensive about this, but sometimes you just get shitty and defensive about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, have you ever been upset by someone else setting a boundary, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I've definitely, you know, had feelings because, you know, someone didn't want to play in a certain way, or, like, didn't want to play with me, wasn't into mm-hmm. people like me, mm-hmm. all of which are entirely my own shit, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, that doesn't mean there weren't days when I was like, but they're pretty, and I want, but I wanna. And, like, you're allowed to have those feelings. You're allowed to have your very own pity party in your head, and it just has to stay in your head is the thing. Because, I get it. Poor you. It's okay. Like, sometimes a boundary means you don't get to do a thing you're excited about. Or sometimes it means feeling like you were a fuck up and, like, you should have read their mind. Mm-hmm. or, like, the thing you want to do is bad, someone has a boundary against that, that must mean it's terrible and no one wants to do it ever.
Yeah, it creates a lot of, like, judgment feelings, even though it's not necessarily about that, but it's very, very easy to feel that way.
Yeah, and I think in all of those cases, what I find the most helpful is to just remember what we were talking about earlier, that a boundary is about how a person feels most comfortable engaging in the world. And, I mean, determine your own morality for yourself, but within mine, I like to make the people around me as comfortable and happy as I can, or not be around them. and I think that's a fairly easy line. So I think within that understanding of how at least I like to engage with the world, when someone expresses their boundary to me, I let myself have my feelings. I remember that, like, those are simply the reaction to the circumstances, and that's fine. And I put them aside to address later, all by my lonesome with my Ben and Jerry's. and try to instead focus in the moment on being thankful for that person giving me a little bit more of their user manual, right? Telling me a little bit more about how to best engage with them. I try to appreciate the fact that they were comfortable enough with me to express that boundary, because we just spent half a fucking show talking about how hard and complicated it can be. Because they probably looked at me and knew I would have all of these icky feelings, and honestly probably know I am having all of these icky feelings because I'm a terrible fucking liar. but they trust that I'm gonna show the fuck up for them, and I'm gonna not lash out and make it about me, and I'm gonna respect it and engage with this in good faith. So I should probably live up to that reputation I've created for myself and be the person I want to be instead of being the impulsive, sad, whiny person that is happening in my head, which, again, valid on the inside.
Yeah, that's all really, really great. You're very smart. And what that points to for me is, like, sometimes when you set a boundary, the other person might need some time to process. Like, we do all have our immediate emotional reactions, and sometimes there's, like, a nervous system response that happens, adrenaline, all that kind of stuff. So, like, sometimes we don't respond in the moment the way that we wish that we would. And I'm not saying that to excuse people who blow up at you when you set a boundary. I don't think that that's okay. But I also think that the way I've reacted to boundary setting in the moment has not always been aligned with, like, my best ethics or my highest self. And so, like, for me, like, one way as a person who is sort of conflict avoidant that I've found more comfortable to set boundaries is in a text the day after it happens. And, like, I notice some people that's weird. Like, why didn't you bring this up at the time? It's like, well, because I was scared shitless at the time, or I was confused about how I felt at the time. It took me a full 24 hours to realize, actually, I'm not okay with that. And I like to do it via text because not only can I take the time to formulate my thought very clearly and express very clearly why the specific thing was not okay and, like, the very specific reasons for that, but also that person can take the time to process that and come back with an answer that hopefully they're proud of, instead of an answer that just comes out of nowhere because they're in the moment and they feel like they have to answer.
Yeah, I definitely, it avoids that initial facial expression reaction that very few of us are great at moderating.
Yeah.
And I can understand that it is entirely reasonable for the person I'm talking to have feelings. And I can also not want to see them. I am also a fragile little beeb. And sometimes texting helps with that.
Yeah, I remember I had hooked up with this guy once. Do you remember this recently divorced British fellow who I met at a sex club?
Yes!
Yeah, so it was this really strange situation. We met at a sex club. We went back to his hotel. We hooked up. And then the following night, he was like, I'm still here, because he was in town for a business trip. And he was like, do you want to come to my hotel, have dinner, and you know, basically have sex, which he did not say it that way because he's British. But the morning after the second night, at which point I felt like we knew each other kind of well. Like, we spent, right. we'd basically been on two very extended dates together. We were making out and, like, maybe going to have morning sex before the checkout time, which is always racing the clock. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, like, do you want to go down on me? Because that's what I wanted. And mm-hmm. he said, no. And then we just did other things. And in the moment, I was like, what? Like, I blew you for so long last night. And, like, I blew you for so long the night before. And, like, also, you told me I was the first partner you had after your ex-wife. And I thought I was so amazing to you. And I thought you were so enthralled by my charms. I just had all these, like, really strong emotional reactions yeah. in the moment that I did not express because I'm very socialized as female. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, it's okay that he set that boundary. It's also okay that, like, as I said, I don't really super want to be with someone who doesn't like going down on me. Like, mm-hmm. it's – or even who is regularly hesitant to do it. And, like, and the tricky thing here is, like, I fully, you know, respect that people are allowed to not want to go down on people. I also just think I – deserve the type of sexual relationships that I want. So, you know, that guy came back into town for another business trip a couple months later and reached out to me, and I was like, oh, I'm actually busy that whole weekend. And, like, you know, he was lovely in some ways, but I just know myself well enough to know that I'm not, I don't know, there was something about that that made me feel very self-judgy and very, like, self-body-shamey, and I was like, mm-hmm. I just don't really want to get back into that with you.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting with that is this is kind of what we were talking about, I think, last week, with this idea of no as being a complete sentence, mm-hmm. which, like, sure, yeah, it is, and it was, but there are other ways that that person could have said that, right? Mm-hmm. They could have, you know, they could have said, yeah, not right now because I just brush my teeth and have weird oral hygiene things and I'm about to leave this hotel and travel for a while, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe they didn't want to do it just that moment, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it had nothing to do with you, right? Maybe they had a bad experience at some time, whatever. Mm-hmm. But speak it, you know, sharing a little context around that boundary could have been an opportunity for you to be like, oh, well, you know, here I have a dental dam. Let's do, you know, mm-hmm. what about that?
Yeah.
Or to, like, problem solve and find something that allows both of you to get your needs met, because while boundaries may seem like they're conflicting, the reasons behind them may not have as much conflict as you think. And I realize mm-hmm. I am the person who is, like, here, just champion the cause of compromise. You don't gotta. You don't.
Yeah.
It, like, that is also fine. And mm-hmm. you two just didn't overlap again, and that's just okay. There are one of the things, I was thinking about this a little earlier, that I found, that I've also found most helpful in creating boundaries is coming to adopt, but also, like, understand and believe in more of an abundance mentality. Mm-hmm. Every person I meet is not the only person who will do these kinky things with me. They're not the only polyamorous person that will ever be attracted to me. They're not the only person who is ever going to be into my trans ass self. Like, there are lots of people into lots of different things. I'll meet them over time, or I mm-hmm. won't. I'll play at this event, or I won't. I'll find other ways to, you know, enjoy and fascinate myself. Mm-hmm. And becoming comfortable in that makes it a lot easier for me to be like, I engage on these terms, and, like, if you don't wanna, I just won't play tonight. And I'll go home and eat ice cream, and it'll be a nice, relaxing evening, and I'll feel great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's actually really apt that this is coming directly after our episode on vetting, because mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of overlap there in terms of, like, emotional skills. I really liked what you were saying there about, like, how there are nicer ways to set boundaries. And I totally agree with you. You don't have to be nice. Nobody is obligating you to be nice. It's exactly like the free speech argument. Yeah, fully. You're within your rights to state your boundary. It's just a consideration of, like, do you want this person to stick around? Do you want them to think you're nice? You might or might not. That's totally up to you.
Yeah.
And also, like, they might not think you're a dick for setting a boundary. Like, they might be fine with it. But, like, to contrast to that last example of someone just fully saying no to going down on me with, I think, an example that is a bit more polite or, like, gave me a bit more of an emotional cushion was, like, I hooked up with a guy once who, like, at the point where he might have started to go down on me, he said to me, like, hey, like, I've never really actually been in, like, that into going down on people with vulvas. Like, I just am not really that into it, and I feel like it's not good to, like, do it when I'm not into it. Like, that's probably not what you want. Unenthusiastic cunnilingus. So, like, is there something else I can do? And there was. Like, he finger-banged me while I used a vibe. But it's like, I actually respect that so much more because he was just telling me the honest reason for setting this boundary, and I agreed with him. Like, yeah. I don't want an enthusiastic cunnilingus. That's not fun for either of us. And also, he was proposing a compromise or a solution. And, like, you don't have to do that, but it's great when you can. It's really, really great, especially if you want to maintain a relationship with this person.
Yeah, and what I love about that is while we can all recognize that our definition of boundaries is about me, the whole world has not adopted that definition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even just the reminder within that of, like, I'm not doing this because I don't want to do this, not because your particular vulva is gross. It's especially the grossest in the whole wide world. I don't know if I could tell you this right now, but I don't know about you, but that's what my anxiety brain would be telling me. Be like, oh, they don't want to go down on me because I am the most disgusting human being they have ever seen. Me individually. It is personally my shame. So just being able to be like, it's just not my jam. It's just, you could have the best vulva in the world. I don't want to go down on them. I want to do other things. Mm-hmm. Let's do a thing we're both excited about. Like, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, to take it to even more of a macro level, I've had a couple of friendships with benefits where at a certain point I was like, you know, the sex part's not actually working out. Do you want to just do this one kink thing together that we really like to do together? Mm-hmm. And that was always so scary for me because the fear with this kind of thing is always that the other person will not be on the same page as you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, both of these people responded in such a way that I couldn't actually tell if they were on the same page as me or they were just, you know, going along with what I said. I think that we were on the same page, but it's hard to tell. But yeah, I mean, if the price of not setting a boundary is going to be horrible sex, like, I just think it's just better for both of you or all of you to set the boundary because nobody wants anybody to be having horrible sex. It's just not good.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a situation where someone set a boundary and you, like, called bullshit on it? Like, you were like, no, that either that's not okay or I just, like, don't think I want to be with you if that's going to be your boundary. Like, it's so hard to do.
I think the only times I've ever had, like, that much of a knee-jerk response were just, like, just the statement of the boundary was enough to, like, just pull the plug on a thing. Were times when the statement of the boundary felt like the end of a conversation instead of the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
When it was, here is this wall, figure out a way to work around it on your own, or don't. Those are the times when I started, when I've wondered more around, like, does this make sense? Because those are times when I feel like I'm in that hedge maze, or I'm... I don't know, it doesn't feel like I'm on the same team as that person. It feels like we're just setting up these obstacles for each other. Instead of trying to build something together. And I've been in a couple of different dynamics where that has happened, but not often. more often than not when people express boundaries, it's become an opportunity for me to find new things to do with that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I relate to that from the other side, actually, because there have definitely been times when I set boundaries as a way of actually just keeping people away from me. Mm. I can't really think of, well, actually, I think, like, I used to sort of daydream about my ideal romantic partner, and I had very specific images in mind for this person. They would have to be very smart and very funny and into musical theater and really good at puns and, you know, just like a huge long list of things. And like, setting aside the fact that my current partner actually ticks almost every
I was gonna say you just described them, but go on.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there was a long period in my dating life before I met them where, like, I would meet people who were actually perfectly lovely and who I enjoyed in different ways than that ideal person would necessarily please me. Just like, you know, they brought out different sides of me, or they made me realize that things were fun that I had never really thought about being fun before. And as a result of having these, like, mental boundaries in my own head, like, sometimes I would dismiss them, or I just, like, wouldn't take them as seriously as I otherwise would have as romantic partners. And yeah, I think, like, sometimes you can, like, limit yourself out of really lovely experiences with boundaries. So it's worth, like, thinking about them on a regular basis. Like, does this still hold true for me?
Mm-hmm. And I think that can be particularly difficult because they are so emotionally fraught, right? We put up a boundary. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we put up a boundary like a wall between us and a feeling, and then mm-hmm. you just never readdress it, and can find that maybe you've grown out of it, or maybe, you know, at the time when you put that wall up, that feeling was insurmountable. But you come mm-hmm. back and you've grown a bit, and that feeling's awfully low now. And you could, you know, this wall is a little overpowered. We can just relocate that, you know?
Yeah. Another example that comes to mind for me, one time this, like, straight-up pickup artist started hitting on me while I was waiting for the streetcar. Like, it was, like, very obviously a pickup artist thing. He came up to me and was like, "Excuse me, are you a blogger?" And I was very weirded out, because I am. Right. But I think this was actually just kind of a line, because he was like, "I don't know, you just look like a creative person." There's no way, I don't think that he, like, knew who I actually was. Yeah. But then he just, like, started pestering me for my phone number. So I gave it to him. And then later that night, he was like, "Hey, want to come over to my place at 10 p.m.? And I was like, no, like, I want to meet you in a public place and at a decent, reasonable hour. And he was like, "Sorry, I was just looking for someone to hook up with, and I don't really have money to, like, go out for a drink," which is, like, fair. But I was like, "That's, I don't feel safe with that. So best of luck to you, buddy."
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Gosh, people are weird sometimes.
They really are.
All right. We got a fair amount of listener questions about boundaries. So I think we are going to do a part two answering some of these questions. They get into some sort of intricacies of boundaries and non-monogamy or kink, which is, as you know, what we do best. Yes. So we'll get into those next week. And should you happen to have some questions about that, you can always email us. I've been Kate Sloan. I am on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. Actually, at time of recording, I had just posted my 999th blog post, so the 1,000th one is going up soon. I can't believe it. That's so many blogs.
So much.
It's, I don't know. That just seems like, I'm speechless. I don't know. Yeah, so go check that out. And I also have a newsletter at katesloan.substack.com. And this week I was talking about some, like, body dysmorphia stuff and how sometimes you wish that you could fuck in a body that feels better to you than the current body you have. I'm sure that this is a relatable idea to you, Bex.
Yes, yes it is.
where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing typically at bextalksex.com. It is down for maintenance at time of recording. If I am very on the ball, it will be up when this is posted, but I don't think so. But coming up soon, there will be a slightly new layout happening over there, so that's nice and exciting. In the meantime, you can find me at bextalksex on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me being naked at Billy Lore on Twitter and many vids and just for fans. Together we are the Dildorks. You can find us at thedildorks.com or at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so very much to Protodome, who did our amazing theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. He has a new album out as of earlier this year. I mean, it is just juicy, sexy chip funk, as the song would suggest. And he's at protodome.bandcamp.com. Thank you also to Amy, who did our wonderful logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter, and she does great art. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye.
Okay, I played The Sims for so many hours today, and I had a Sim who married her older girlfriend, and right. The two of them adopted a child, a toddler, and then they had a party to, like, celebrate the adoption, and at the party, the younger girlfriend laughed herself to death, which I didn't know was a thing you could do in The Sims. I just got a pop-up that was like, she's laughing herself to death, and I watched her choke and die, and like, just on the kitchen floor. And then
the older girlfriend,
after this happened at the same party, the older girlfriend, who was an elder, like, died of old age. So
this is the worst party.
I know. So they have this toddler who they had just adopted. And there, fortunately, there was someone at the party who was, like, the niece of one of these people and, like, adopted the kid. But, like, I was like, God, if I went to a lesbian birthday party that was like this, like, I don't think I would go to those anymore.
And I love that you're like, luckily there was a relative at the party who adopted the child. As if, like, if they weren't at the party, well, shit, that kid just owns that house now, I guess.
No, because what happens for real in The Sims is they get taken away by a social worker and you might never be able to get them back.
Oh, no. Yeah. If there is not someone in the immediate vicinity to adopt them.
To take care of them, yeah.
Wow, damn.
Yeah, it's fucked up. I worry about those kids in the computer foster system. Like, are they okay?